Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle. And I'm looking here, Chris, and I can't find anything about Trent Reznor.
Oh, I must scoring be wrong again.
Looking for a dream. It's Clint Mansell.
Yeah, I guess he must have done a remix out of it on that album.
Okay.
What, Lyle telling you, you're wrong, you're wrong. No, you're wrong.
Well, I mean, didn't I get it on? Pretty much on a weekly basis. So.
You weren't even, like, saying anything. You're just like,
he's used to it.
He's like, no, he's singing a song or something. Anyway, but that kind of brings up our first topic, which is...
I'm wrong.
Chris is wrong, yeah.
Don't we start every topic that way?
Yeah.
Right?
Just a recap of the week, of the wrongness of the week. Now, we thought we'd talk a little bit about music as kind of an intro topic, because kind of be tough to devote a whole episode to music since we wouldn't be able to, like, play anything.
Plus, no one wants to listen to the stuff I listen to anyway.
Yeah, that is true. And it came up because there were, I think it was an Adele song. Oops, I think we just lost all our listeners. And it was like Someone Like You, and how that... you can kind of relate to that song, or people can relate to the song, because, you know, you listen to it and it's a person that's going to find a replacement like the previous lover, instead of one of those, like, powerful songs, you know, self-empowerment, where they say, I'm going to find somebody better than you, right, or different than you, or somebody who doesn't treat me like crap like you. But this has a lot of honesty in it.
I'm going to find someone who treats me just like the crap that you did.
She never says the guy treats her poorly. He just kind of is over. And he's moved on, and she hasn't. And there's a lot of honesty there. So thinking about how, like, sometimes music can really open up kind of your heart, your mind, and how to use that.
Your soul. Come on, you can't say those other two and not expect someone to chime in with your soul.
Yeah. People are going, where are the jokes? And I just wait. And you're thinking of the effective use of music on, like, Friday Night Lights, Explosions in the Sky. They're really good, and how that can really inspire you. So I kind of threw it out to Chris and Wayne and said, do you use music when you write a game or create a mood for a game, even if it's just you thinking of how to do the game? And that's the response I got from them.
Apparently, you guys. Sorry, I just didn't... Okay, I'll go first then. I hadn't before. The first game I actually used music to prepare with was the Pulp game we ran. And it actually started out, I watched the Indiana Jones trilogy and The Rocketeer to kind of get in the mood for Pulp. And then I kind of realized, oh, that's a great soundtrack. And so I, you know, put it on my iPod and would listen to it on the speakers. And I found, like, that would kind of help me get into the mood. I actually considered using pieces from the soundtrack during the game, but decided not to because music is kind of difficult to juggle during a session. You're already doing so much other stuff. But
yeah,
after that, I found that, yeah, you know, listening to certain music definitely, you know, puts you in the mood for, you know, writing a specific adventure. I think it can really help sort of focus our DMs or GMs when they're preparing for a session or writing up an adventure.
Yeah, I do too, but it's not so much that I go out and listen to music while I'm trying to write a game, but it's kind of just by default. I listen to music pretty much all day, every day while I'm working. So, and I, when I have a game being planned, then I'm thinking about it also all day long. So it often syncs up with the music. I find it's a little bit dangerous though, because, like, sometimes I'll start envisioning all these set pieces. And if I do too much of that, I have a bad tendency as a DM to try and force those on the players. So I have to watch myself when I'm doing that. But yeah. And yourself, Lyle?
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I was thinking, like, I was listening to some Detroit punk or doing a set in a game in Detroit. And yeah, you do. There is the danger that you do start to create a very, very rigid story to try to hit those notes that you feel are being hit in that song. And also, it's really tough to replicate that in the game.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
people, like, bring in music. For one thing, the song doesn't last long enough. And then you're like, oh, let me cue up something
like that.
Like that.
Or that
similar
again.
Yeah. Or that again.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this time, can you guys fight when they get the music picks up? You know? You're still talking about the strategy there. So, yeah, what was it? I was listening to the Stooges Yeah, thinking about a fight scene, you know. Something. No, but yeah, I think that really can help. And I mean, I'm wondering about experimenting with like actually playing something to kick off. We keep talking about this, about ways to really get people in the mood for a game. And you know, you come from, like right now, you come from work. Yeah, you know, you're still shaking off work, or you know, stuff happens in the week that's not very entertaining and kind of weighs on your mind. And, you know, having like a music cleanse. That makes sense?
No, it totally does. It does make sense.
Yeah. Or, you know, like...
I'm just glad you didn't say music enema.
All right. Yeah, exactly. Cleanse. Coffee cleanse. Or even like the, like little barrier, you know, between the, like an airlock almost.
No, like we had said before about, you know, the chant you can do in the Friday Night Lights episode before you start the session. And I think I said this before, but part of the reason why I like running that Pulp game is I do a recap of, you know, sort of what happened on the quote-unquote last episode. And in addition to building tension, as we mentioned before, it also signals to the players that, you know, the game is going to start, and I try and put on that kind of, you know, old-school 1930s-esque newsreel announcer. And I think that kind of helps get people in the mood a little bit, so I could really see how choosing a theme song, or kind of like the music for the opening credits, if you will, would really help get people in the mood, and also signal that the game is going to start, so switch over to that mindset.
No, absolutely. I mean, people who watch like Battlestar Galactica, and that, you know, it's like previously on Battlestar Galactica, it gives you a little recap, but then it starts like the music and, you know, ramps up, and by the time that theme song's done, you're ready for that episode.
Yeah, like I started watching the new series of Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. And it's very much the same thing. It's sometimes they do a very short recap, but then it's a little bit of a story that sets up kind of what's going to happen that episode. Usually doesn't end on a cliffhanger, because it's not the end of the episode, it's the beginning. But usually there's kind of an, oh, what's going to happen? And then they cue the theme music.
That seems to be really popular now for TV shows, is they have like kind of a cold start.
Right.
And then, yeah, it ends like, True Blood does it a lot.
Yes. It's exactly like True Blood, you know, kind of like, whoa, what's going to happen? And then the music starts and, you know.
Yeah.
So I could see that being really useful for a game as well.
Yeah. No, that would be good. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Are you saying like do a little bit, stop, play the music, and then start again? Or do you mean like start with the music?
I think start with the music, because I don't think starting the session would, because people, if people are already in the mindset of, okay, it's time to play the game, then why interrupt with your quote unquote theme song? Why not just continue to play the game?
Yeah, that's
what I'm saying. Exactly. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm not being my usual disagreeable self.
So we're going to do our second installment in our Magic series. The first was the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. We opted for something with a shorter title.
Yeah.
This time, and that's divination. So with magic, we'll be looking at specific groups or magical groups, but also we'll be looking at types of magic. And just like in the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, we're going to look at what was like kind of really done, and that will be primarily the focus. And then we'll also touch on, you know, what's been done in fiction, and then what could be done. Actually, if you look at divination, and you could pretty much slap any prefix to mancy, and you'll get a type of divination. I mean, I didn't even bother remembering, but there's one with needles, and there's one with sharp objects, because you have to make that distinction.
Right. I'm sure there's one with knives.
Yeah, yeah. Sharp objects, not knives.
Yeah, yeah.
No, box cutters for the more recent. Now, you know, as we were saying, like, there's many different kinds of divination, so how to divide them instead of dividing them by into like 500 different parts. We'll do the mancies and the non-mancies. We decided to divide them into three parts. One is things that go on around them, and that probably make a lot more sense once we start. And things that go on inside their head, so visions, and things where they use tools. So for like things that go on around them, like a really good example is omens or signs.
So yeah, like, from what I was saying, Omens is, well, like you said, Lyle, it's a kind of a passive reading of the natural and unnatural signs around you. You know, it could be, like you keep track of the strange weather patterns, or, you know, there's a two-headed sheep born in the village or something like that. It's just some kind of sign that everybody goes, oh my gosh, it's portent, something is going to happen. Or you could take it more like the Chinese did with the I Ching, where they recorded meticulously everything, like every day's weather and how many heads every sheep had, for years and years, and they tried to draw patterns off of
that. Isn't that like an almanac?
So, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I was going to say exactly that. I'm guessing the sheep-headed column had a lot of ones, you know? Now, when I was doing the research, there was like a woodcut that I saw of, you know, omens, and it had, you know, like a star, like a red star in the sky, and it had like a two-headed kid. And then, like, a kid with split legs. And the thing I noted is, wow, those kids look really happy in that woodcut.
You see that kid in India who was born with all those legs, and they think it's like Kali, and they're...
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I saw that.
She looked happy.
Mm. I guess I wasn't implying that they were all unhappy, but...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, really, it could be worse than having extra arms and legs.
Yeah, what I like about omens is that they can be both positive and negative.
Hmm.
And it just depends, I guess... You know, if it's an invading army, yeah, are you the invading army? Then that might be a good sign. That was the example, like, for William the Conqueror, I think. It was like, Halley's Comet is a good sign for him.
Turn that frown upside down. Oh, yeah. Be in the invading army.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying that the invading army was the omen. This could be a bad news for us as an army invading.
Thanks, Sir. Yeah. No, I mean, like, yeah, there's a red star in the sky. There's a comet. You know, in the sky, and you're, if you're invading the country, well, that's a good omen. Or you could, well, whoever wins, I should say.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever wins the battle, it was like, that was a good omen for us, and it was a bad omen for you.
Yeah.
Well, nothing to do with the fact that we outnumbered you and had better weapons.
No, of course not. It was the omen.
The comet. So other things that go on around them, any like kind of natural phenomenon, really.
Flood?
Ooh, maybe we should just call it natural phenomenon.
Ooh, not flood, drought.
solar eclipses, things out of the ordinary that happen, and then people would want an explanation of what that means, and then people would, you know, extrapolate.
So you're talking about like hordes of locusts or crops withering and dying.
Yeah.
Or to go positive, a super abundant harvest. How's that? Like, I'm going kind of negative.
I think we're
going
to eat. I think we're going to starve. And again, thank you.
Turns everyone into a divinator. I foresee a great dinner tonight.
But, I mean, we even do that now. I mean, people like predict the coming of a natural disaster when they see like flocks of birds.
But we do it with science.
Yeah, well, just like Arthur C. Clarke said, you know, sometimes magic and science, well, paraphrasing him, sometimes magic and science are indistinguishable.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we...
And, you know, actually, now that you mention it, probably the most popular form of divination in modern times is astrology, which is just that, like looking at the planet's position and somehow using that to figure out what your fortune is going to be.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Mm. Sorry, not to split hairs here, but is that predictable?
Like, what do you mean predictable?
Like, so, for example, you brought up the thing about using animals or birds to predict when there's going to be a disaster, right?
Right.
I guess that is provable, right? I guess you can kind of test it several times, you know,
okay.
Like the multiple earthquakes.
Do you mean refutable? Is astrology refutable? Can you test it?
Yeah.
Well,
we're doing an episode on magic.
I realize that. Okay. I realize that.
It's a superstition. No, you can't.
But I guess that's kind of where I said like science versus magic,
because if you could, then it would be science.
Yeah, not a lot of things we're going to talk about are published in a science journal.
I guess I should have read the title of the episode. It's called Magic.
Sorry, has anybody really checked if you can like tell the future with looking at needles? Is astrology... I mean, yeah, you could test it, of course. I mean, but are you saying because they word things so vaguely?
No, I was thinking more like astrology, in my opinion... Or what people seem to be looking for now is, you know, like, will they have a happy life? Will they meet someone they love? Or, you know, just will they have, like, good luck or bad luck?
Right. And
again, can you really prove that? Which I guess gets to your point of a vague wording. you know, where something like the...
I think that you're raising a really good point, unknowingly, and that is...
Damn you and your points!
And that is that I think that was one of the best tricks of a fortune teller, a seer, or whichever word you want to give that person, is they would word it in such a way where it would minimize the chance for them to be wrong.
Hmm.
You know, a great victory will take place on this battlefield. For who? For the winner.
No, yeah. For the winner, nice.
For the army that fights.
I was just going to say, the sights are vague, I cannot tell.
Well, no, there's one, the famous one from the Oracle of Delphi. You will go, you will return, never in war you will perish. And the idea is you can put the comma in the sentence before or after. You will go, you will return, never in war you will perish. Or, you will go, you will return, never in war you will perish. So.
There's also the one about a mighty empire will fall.
Oh, yeah.
And it did. It was supposed to be the wrong one. Right? The one that, it's like, if you go there, the mighty empire will fall. Yes. Nope.
Well, it wasn't untrue. Yeah, you know?
Like, hey. Yeah, you were warned, kind of. Yeah.
Ish. Now, the one I think you were talking about, Wayne, was the term is confirmation bias, where if somebody hears something that's kind of vague, but they can somehow apply it to themselves, it's just as a psychological function, they will try to.
I think confirmation bias is you seek out the things that confirm your opinions or beliefs. Is that what you said?
thank you for clarifying. That's what I was trying to say, yes.
I'm sorry. I guess, okay, maybe I can see that. It's like somebody, you'll meet Mr. Right, and then you meet somebody, and he's like, oh, he's pretty good, yeah.
No,
so he went from Mr. Okay to Mr. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because whoever you went to see said, oh, you meet Mr. Right, you're like, oh, that guy, he's awesome. You know, that must be Mr. Right. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Well, in the example I was reading, was like, it's something that psychics use where they'll say, you know, oh, you've had health problems for it. And of course, anyone who's, you know, over the age of, 15 or something, they've had some kind of health thing, a broken leg or whatever. So they'll try and find that thing in their life and attach the fortune teller's, words to that. At least that's in the example I read.
Yeah, it's like, it's a mentalist trick.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, speaking of psychics and mentalists, I mean, we're dealing with, like, in the mind. Of course, a mentalist is someone who just does tricks. As opposed to a psychic on a hotline. We're just gifted individuals who are fortunate to find a job that exploits that. Yeah, but visions can be, you know, people can kind of focus their powers. I like, you know, where the visions come to them. And that can like really change the course of history. Like, what? Oh, I'm drawing a blank. But there's an example where it actually led to a coup. In the latter Roman Empire, because there was a person who got a vision that they saw this person in the purple, which means as the emperor.
Hmm.
And he's like, well, can you shut up about that? And the visionary or whatever wouldn't. They kept saying, no, I've seen him in the purple. I just wouldn't. So it was like, well, the emperor's going to hear about this, and pretty soon it's going to, you know, plant the seed. So it became a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Hmm.
Mm. So Cassandra in Greek mythology. So it was cursed to see the future and cursed that no one would believe her.
Mm.
So she would get those visions.
But to bring them up again, then the Greek oracles there, I mean, they had, I'm sure, plenty of visions off of those volcanic fumes. For anyone who doesn't know, the Oracle of Delphi sat on top of a volcanic crevice, and they said the toxic fumes might be the reason for her visions.
Yeah, I think what's interesting with the oracle is just, like a historian named, Kiddo. And he just, surmised that, like, the oracle, the council, they were just, you know, they've been asked so many questions that they kind of, like, figured out, you know, they knew a lot about the geopolitical environment, so they would give pretty decent advice.
Mm-hmm.
But because everybody, like, the Greeks believed in, oracles and seers, that they would kind of play that up. And
yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that again, because I was thinking about that, and yeah, sort of knowing that, and knowing that some people just said that the oracles just had a bigger understanding of what was happening in the world than the average person. That's kind of how they gave their, I guess, what, their prophecies.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you could count that as a type of vision. I mean, it's not you know, a supernatural vision, or it's not like a dream, or it's not, you know, given to you by God or something. But it is kind of like a prediction based on information.
What, the oracles?
Yeah. Like, if you kind of go on the assumption that they were giving predictions based on the information they had, and they could kind of, you know, estimate or sort of guess what would happen based on the information they have, I don't know. Can you really count that as a vision?
No, I'm not counting it at all.
Okay.
Like, kiddo, though, explain, like, okay, so these guys gave advice, and, like, where did it come from? But, like, yeah, what Chris is saying is, like, the show is this person dancing around and saying things, and they're interpreting what that person's saying.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah, and, like, they were, I think I read that the oracles, they only gave predictions on the specific day of their god. I think, again, Delphi, sorry, that was the one I read most about. She only gave predictions on Apollo's day, which was like the 7th of every month. So even if you asked her a question, she could have up to an entire month to, you know, consult and look things up and ask other people. And then at the very end, give one of those dual answers, which can be go either way. Girl had it made.
Yeah, also, like, I know we're saying visions, but I also think people that hear things would fall into this. I think more accurately, you could say that Cassandra heard things as opposed to saw things.
Just thinking of the other senses, you could kind of count auto-writing as well.
Kind of falls into our tools a bit, but yeah, sure. Because you're writing with a pen.
I know what a tool is. You know what about a tool? You're being a tool about these damn tools.
Visions without glasses falls in here. Visions with glasses, tools.
Oh, jeez. Sorry. Glasses of the gods. That's actually kind of funny. That's an interesting idea.
Yeah. That would be cool. I'm farsighted. Yes.
Oh, jeez.
Is that Chris laughing? Trying to not to laugh? Was that
I'm impressed. I think he's trying not to groan at that bad pun.
No, but, okay, can I just, I'm going to extrapolate, because it actually is, yeah, it was kind of funny. I'll cop to that. Sorry.
I'll laugh at my own joke, all right?
No one yes, else I'll is. Put myself on the back, sure.
No, but imagine that it's like somebody can only see at a certain point in the future, but can't see the immediate present.
Hmm.
That was redundant. Or the immediate future.
Right.
But they see, like, a couple days ahead of time. And that's their vision. Whereas, like, nearsighted would be, well, us.
Wouldn't that be regular sighted?
Yeah.
Well, I guess not to get into specifics, but I guess the problem with that is, would the person still be able to interact with the present? Because if they can only sort of see into the future, then how do they see what's going on around them to interact with those people?
You know, going with the thing about the guy, someone who can see or who lives in the future like that, you might take a page from character Dr. Manhattan. What was the comic book?
Oh, you think of Watchmen?
Yes, thank you very much. Why did I forget that? But, like, at the end of the book, he starts to kind of drift through different parts of time, and he'll say, excuse me, Rorschach, I'm having a conversation with you in 5 minutes where I'm explaining something.
Hmm, yeah.
Wasn't he just kind of like... all time.
Yeah, he was,
it was
all time.
All the time, for lack of a better term. You know, he kind of...
He tried to maintain his humanity as much as he could, and then towards the end of the series, he just, no, I'm not human.
Well, that reminds me of the stuff from Dune as well.
Where Moebius?
Yeah, where you just kind of, you see all of time all at once and all the possibilities, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like when he loses his sight, and then he can just use his future sight to guide him around. That was pretty cool.
Kind of difficult to do, though.
Used your future sight to walk around? Yeah.
Right, unless you used a cane, which is a tool!
Right. Kind of going away from the real examples, but... No, I kind of like, yeah, using the different senses to kind of give you... I hesitate to use the word vision or a sign, but I was thinking, like, the sense of touch or the sense of smell. Those you can... kind of incorporate that. I know I'm kind of jumping ahead to the game stuff, but I can't think of any historical example where somebody smelt
the
an
future.
Explosion. Yeah, I smelt the future. I smell the future, and it's pie.
But, no, that actually, I mean, it sounds like on a day-to-day basis it wouldn't be that interesting, but man, you could have a lot of fun with that, the sense of touch or the sense of smell being in the future. You know, you smell flames like that, and something is the house you're in is going to burn down soon.
Now that you mentioned that, I do kind of like that because it would have to be, you know, a metaphor. It would have to be very vague, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, smelling flames might not necessarily mean that a fire will happen.
Yeah. You know what you could do, though? Do scrying with your sense of touch.
That'd be pretty cool. So maybe we'll skip ahead to our third, and that'll be tools. And we'll start with scrying. and the kind of tools that they would use are reflective.
Yeah, I'm kind of not seeing, how that would work. So how would you do scrying with a sense of touch?
So, for example, if you wanted to find out where this person is staying, so you know their name, so you summon up the powers and you go there, and you basically, it's as if you were blind and deaf. You have to feel around the room or the area to try and see where it is. You feel grass outside. You feel something soft and fuzzy. You feel the hard walls around you. So, okay, you know he's inside or outside. You can try and touch things around, but it would be dangerous. You might accidentally touch something hot or whatnot.
I think if you were using scrying, you would have a certain tool that you use, like your pool of water or probably the most famous, the crystal ball. And that's a very visual thing. Perhaps it's slightly auditory, but I think it's mostly visual. And they kind of look into this reflective surface and they see things. Whereas what I imagine when you said kind of a sense of touch and scrying is almost like a braille, and it's like, it could even be a crystal ball. It just doesn't matter that they can look into it and they kind of touch it.
Oh.
And then things come and happen to that ball.
And, I see now. And when I was thinking, I didn't see the connection there.
Yeah, but I think actually both could work. Because
But is it scrying, or is he just like feeling around and like touching things?
I think it could work, because what Chris is saying,
it's
you're kind of
unbreakable.
I guess so. But you're kind of either seeing the future or seeing information that you wouldn't. Sorry, you're feeling information that you wouldn't normally feel. You know, like as Chris said, you know, you kind of put your hand out and you feel a tree where there actually isn't one where you currently are. And you say, okay, you know, the person I'm looking for is, I'm going to strap in, say, in a forest because there are trees around me. And you're sort of projecting your sense.
No, but then that sounds like a vision. Sorry.
It sounds like a
tactile vision, which is great. No, I'm not saying it's a bad idea. What I'm just trying to do is just draw the distinction between like what we traditionally view as scrying.
Right.
Which would be using a tool to see things into, like a reflective tool. But yeah, that'd be great. You could have a tool that kind of reflects and sends messages tactically. And what Chris is saying, it's fantastic. It's a tactile vision, which would be great. Or even like, when you touch things, and again, making a game reference, but what was it? Spirits Touch in Vampire.
Mm.
And you can touch things and see what happened just before, you know, just before it died or what happened, you know, moments before.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And that's really cool. Yeah. But I like Chris's spin where they're not seeing the tree. They're, what is this?
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that'd be tough to do in a game.
Yeah.
In that you go, it feels like a tree.
I mean,
you would have to tell them what it is.
Right.
You can't go, it feels like a tree. And then they kind of like do all extrapolation. You smell fire. I mean, it's going to be like fire. What the fire is.
Right.
You know, it can, I mean, that's where you can be the vague and the ambiguity can come in. Yeah.
I think that.
Can I just do my epilepsy thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, go for it.
It's like,
seizure.
Yeah, sorry. Didn't take my meds. one of the things they connected, and I don't know if this is true with all epileptics, but some of them have a trigger, and sometimes it's a sensory trigger. Like they'll smell like burning toast and then bam, that's a sign that they're going to have an epileptic fit. So. It's not really divination, but I think that's like sometimes you can pull. I know we're doing an episode on magic, but you take things like that where somebody going, "Oh, I smell burning toast," and they're kind of predicting that their body is going to go into an epileptic fit, and then people can kind of use that. And I mean, really, that's science, is observation. You view the same thing over and over again. Okay, all right, that's going to happen.
No, sorry, I misunderstood what you meant. As in, I thought there was actually burning toast that then triggered the person's epileptic seizure. But you mean it's almost essentially like a phantom smell that only this person experiences.
Well, it's not almost essentially. It is a phantom smell. Yeah, so their brain, whatever is going to trip that seizure, also just trips this particular smell.
Right.
So they go, oh, I smell burning toast. And poof.
Isn't that also, I've heard that's also for like heart attacks sometimes.
There's like burning toast?
Sometimes there's, if it's not specifically burning toast, then there's a similar smell.
I thought it was pain in the heart.
Well, I mean, besides, all right, smart guy. I meant besides that as well.
Wait, I'm having a tactile sense that I'm going to get a heart attack.
Yeah, how do you tell? Oh, this giant pain in my chest. Oh. Man, could it be any more vague? I think it's going to mean today's going to be a good day. All right.
No, but actually, Lyle, I really like that idea because I've always what you did in the vampire game, and it was just kind of going with the vampire rules, but you forced us to do it with the reading auras. You could just say, you know, that this guy's aura shows that he's a liar or that he's violent, but the book has it where it translates those into colors and shapes and how light or dark the aura is. And you would always tell us those characteristics of it, so we had to go and look those up. And I really like the ambiguity of that, because it allows the players to interpret the information they're getting. And if you did something like that, where someone was getting these tactile or olfactory information, they would have to figure out what it meant. Like, you smell burning toast, maybe that's a kind of danger sense, something's going to happen, or you smell flowers, so maybe something beneficial is coming, like that. But the character would have to learn that pattern as they move along.
Ooh, my burning toast sense is tingling! No, I was actually going to say something very similar, Chris, sort of. It's sort of one of those things, like, I don't know if there would be enough time in the game for the player to learn what it meant.
In a campaign, there would be.
I guess so, but, like, even, like though the vampire game has those auras, right, and as you said, the different colors mean different things, I think it would still take a long time in-game for us as players to remember what all those things meant.
Oh, and yeah, you don't have to. There was a sheet that we
read
them on. Well,
exactly. And I think that's, if you're going to do something with the other senses, I think that's what I would do. You know, have something like a list of either, you know, sensations or sounds or tastes or smells. And next to the list, have what they mean.
Mm-hmm.
That way the player could, I think it's one of those cases where the character would know this. The player doesn't, and so you have to provide some kind of mechanical example or something to support or augment the player's sort of lack of knowledge.
Yeah. Well, actually, I really do like that idea of having the different signs or symbols that are, and that's fine to have them written down that the characters can refer to, because it does give a little bit of ambiguity in the divination. I think that's important. That helps the game go better, because if you just spell it out to the players, it kind of wastes the potential of divination, I think.
If you make a really simple code, like let's say things that are smell like fire, things that are warm, things that are bright mean this, like mean X,
right?
Mean combat, danger. Things that are cold smell like peppermint. I'm trying to get a cold smell.
Yeah, I got you. Right, I picked it up. I was divining what you were saying.
Yeah. Right. Then that can actually mean like things are going to be calm or mellow or something like that. So
yeah, exactly.
But you can even, like, I mean, you don't have to always say, oh, fire smell equals this, but warm, fiery, bright things are this, and cold things are that, and
lukewarm things are that.
Yeah.
Well, actually, that's something that you can do, because you can, if you have them, like, several steps along a scale, I suppose hot and cold are pretty opposites, but you could put that ambiguity in. Like, for example, if, in D&D, there was a spell, called Augury, and there was, like, weal and woe, for good and bad. Of course, I only remember the good and bad ones, but there's kind of good, bad, and then a medium one. And you could make the signs unclear. You could say, well, it could be a good one, or it could be medium, or it could be medium, or it could be bad. So I just like that idea where the characters might not be sure what exactly their divination is telling them, so they have to try and work it out.
That's good. And just to finish up tools.
Sorry.
Some other tools that people used. Since you're touching on that, I mean, you're touching on augurs, and those are people that read, the bird signs?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the Romans were very, very stupid. So this comes from ancient Rome, who were extraordinarily superstitious and had all of these rituals. And yeah, so even like, whether or not they could have a vote, they would have to get whether or not the signs were favorable. And, and for whatever reason, they used chickens a lot, so you wouldn't go into battle until you sacrificed a chicken. But I think reading animal entrails and things like that, the Romans called hado species, and that's animal sacrifice.
Yeah, I think there's a bunch of different names for reading animal entrails or livers especially.
Yeah.
from what I read, the Greeks did that with, they call it ekpisisi, and it was goats, and it was described that they would actually bring herds of goats with them, because if they weren't sure about the entrails, they'd just slaughter another goat. So before a battle, they could go through dozens of goats.
Yeah. I mean, they even, like, read the behavior of the animal during the sacrifice, you know, kind of what they did, which direction the blood would go, how they fell. I mean, you could pretty much do anything and everything.
Exactly.
Other tools like rolling bones, stones, tea leaves.
Yeah.
One of the ones I thought was really interesting was the what the Chinese used to do with the bone sears. They would kind of etch little markings into turtle shells, and then they'd throw the turtle shell into the fire, and depending on how it cracked in the heat, they would use that to determine the fortune. And those little symbols that they etched into it, that's eventually what became the Chinese language, the written language.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. So I thought that was cool.
And you can also then use, like, mathematics and say that's a tool. Hmm. Like, people have predicted where a black hole would be or where planets would be using mathematics, and you kind of predict the success of a stock or the success of a business, determining its future value. And
so, in other words, the U.S. government should have hired more seers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in a sense,
it might have helped.
Sometimes, like, people in the stock market, I mean, yeah, a lot of them are gamblers, but they use formulas and that to weigh risk and reward.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of obviously not magical at all, or is it? And you saw that done well in fiction with Isaac Asimov's Foundation series, where they kind of, they use it, I think, what they call it, psychohistory? And they predict that the empire is going to end, but they can revive it if they set up a foundation.
Right, yeah. Right. That was a good series.
That was a great series. Hey, do you know, what was his name? I forget what his name is, the clown or something like that. And they described him as unusually tall and skinny.
Talking about the mule?
The mule, thank you. Unusually tall and skinny. My height, my weight. I was like, hey, hold on. Yeah. And I am quite tall.
Yeah. And
what was Asimov, like a dwarf?
Don't you? I think you mean a fat dwarf.
Yeah.
He's tall and skinny.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about
it. For the audience who doesn't know, Lyle's currently sitting on 10 pillows to come to the level of the microphone.
Okay, you're making me look like I'm a midget, dude.
That's good.
I am not a midget.
I am not a crook.
Although I do have that test, is anybody shorter than me is like, damn, you're short, dude. I didn't know they made people that small these days. And if I found somebody skinnier than me, I'd probably do the same. You're talking about rolling the bones. And I guess if anybody could read the bones, actually nobody could read the bones, but if anybody could read the bones, then everybody would carry around a bag of bones and just toss them. So, I mean, you do have to have that medium who reads the bones. Even though they are using a tool, it is actually the person using the tool. So,
The tool's not using itself. Oh.
The bones are rolling themselves. But, yeah, now that this is a bit of a stretch, but we've already done a lot of that in this episode. is that in the wild cards, they had the great and powerful turtle, and he was a really powerful telekinetic, but he felt he always had to be in this, like, turtle shell that he created out of, like, a Volkswagen bug. And you could kind of do that with somebody who can divine things, but they always think they have to read it through the bones, and maybe that could be something, like, kind of a nice character arc, as they can discover that maybe they could always do this power on their own.
Well, I think part of the thing about using, like, divination in-game is, because there is kind of the idea of, like, spontaneous divination, where you can pretty much, I guess they're sort of akin to visions, where you can read almost anything, you know? You can just kind of, like, look around the natural world and see patterns or events. And
well, why don't we call the first part spontaneous divination?
We're past that now. Moving on.
It's over, man. Yeah. It's over.
Let it go. But anyway, you could sort of read things spontaneously, right? And you could do that in the game, but it would be really hard to do, because the game master would have to sort of provide lots of details in excess of what they would normally have to do for the sort of the diviner character to be able to read them. So I think that's why, like, in a game, you do kind of need that channel that you would have to use to be able to read these signs. Otherwise, it's anything and sort of everything is up for grabs. So,
yeah.
I think...
I do see a very good role of using tools as a limiter,
yeah,
as a channeler, as just as a thing, as like the person making the conscious effort to do it. Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. I was just saying that it just kind of came to me about wild cards. There could be a possible story arc in that it is a limiter, and don't let it limit you because you've lost the bones. So what, did I lose my powers? And I said, well, yeah, I mean, where's the story going to go?
It's kind of the same story with any kind of power limiter. Is, you know, there's that story arc where you realize you don't need it, or you find a substitute that's better, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure there's movies where it's, you know, oh, I lost X, and it's like, oh, there's this thing that kind of looks like it, and hey, I found out that was just a crutch because I don't actually need it. I mean, you could definitely do that.
Yeah. I think the spontaneous, though, is probably the most common type when it comes to games, though, because that's pretty much what all the spellcasting things are. You just say a few magic words, and then you get your vision.
As a code, like a tool?
Well, that's a tough question. Like, I totally agree with what you guys were saying, that I think having this code going into the players, it's like I was saying before, it enters in some kind of something that the players have to interpret, but it is spontaneous. Like, they can do it pretty much whenever they want
to. But I think there is a limiter. If you're talking kind of like D&D style spell casting, in that you generally need components, right? You have to have the spell prepared. So
in that case, the
game master isn't caught flat-footed.
Right.
Right. The player says, oh, my character's A, has learned this spell. B, has now collected these reagents to be able to cast it, and is now going through the motion of casting it, you know, so the GM can say, oh, great, and here's the information, you know, they can prepare the information that they assume the player is going to look for.
Sorry, what are you worried about? The player just keep constantly going, and now what? And now what? What's going to happen 10 minutes from now?
I don't think a player would do that.
But you could say, okay.
Dude, you did it in the last game, in my game.
but you could do it like, okay, great, you get another vision, and your nose starts to bleed. And do it. Okay, now there's geysers coming out of your nose.
And your head erupts like a pimple of blood.
Now your eyes are bleeding. There's blood coming out of your ears. And they're like, maybe I better stop with the video. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Oh.
I
want to see 10 more minutes in the future, and it's black. Okay? It's black. Oh, maybe I'll stop. Yeah, maybe you should. Yeah, but you could do that. I mean it takes a lot of power. I mean, that's a powerful weapon.
Yeah, you could do like a limited number of times that you can do it per day like that. You could do it where it gets increasingly inaccurate the more often you use it, or maybe like a chance of misinformation comes in.
Now, he wasn't using it to divine things, but you ever see or read Firestarter?
I haven't, no.
And he was the father of the Firestarter. He could make people see things. Like, he'd give you, here's a $100 bill, and he gives you a $1 bill, and you'll see a $100 bill. But then his nose will start to bleed and stuff like that. So anything that, if you're going to make purely the power of the mind, then yeah, make that purely the power of mind, and that can be quite stressful.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What if it's like just natural things, though, like, you know, like flocks of birds or...
Well, the player's just going to conjure up a flock of birds? I see a flock of birds. That's creating the future, in a sense. Sorry, I don't see the problem there, because the game master has total control over the environment.
What if he carries a herd of goats with him?
No, but I guess what...
to slaughter.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, then there's your limiter. Oh, you're out of goats. Oh, shoot, you know? But, no, I saw it more like if someone... Because there's some people who just have, like, the ability to see patterns.
Okay, so... But I mean, you see that in... I can't recall an example, but you see that, like, in movies, you know, where they look at something and suddenly things start to move.
Right.
And then they'll see the pattern. And that's what can happen. It's like, what are they going to do? Walk up to a wall and try to see a pattern in this wall. And you just go, you can't. But then it's like, bam, you know, you're just looking at the tablecloth, and all of a sudden things start coming together. And it looks like this.
They did that in Criminal Minds a lot. The genius guy, he would look at things and like the numbers would float off of the page. Oh, also that other movie, A Beautiful Mind.
Yeah, sorry, are you thinking Criminal Minds or Numbers?
Criminal Minds.
Numbers would float off the page in Criminal Minds?
Yeah, like he'd look at a wall full of different suspects, or like letters that were written by the suspects in code, and like different words would come off of the page and float around and reassemble themselves so he could read the code.
Is this the young guy?
Yeah, the genius guy.
Okay. I never watch it, so.
For example, yeah.
No.
But you know, actually, what you're saying before with that, like looking at things and trying to pick up the patterns on them, that was a suggestion that I was going to bring up, was instead of using this divination as like a power. How about you put it as a skill that the players have, where they see some kind of sign or something, or they just look at something and try to discern the pattern in it, and they roll this skill. And if they get a strong success, maybe then you give them some indication of what it might be. If it's a middling success, maybe it's unclear what it might be.
Sounds good. I thought you were going to say make it a curse, but yeah.
If it's a curse, then it would be kind of like a story tool.
Yeah, it's completely different from what Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's kind of the point I was making before. Like, if it's a skill, then the person can just look at the tablecloth roll and say, tell me what I see.
Yeah, but here's what I'm not getting about. Here's what you're not getting.
Right.
Sorry.
Here's what I'm
getting it just fine. It's like, let's say you have like an investigation, right? And the guy's like sitting there eating and he's rolling investigation while he's eating at something that has nothing to do with the investigation. Then he's gonna come up. It's like, yeah, you see it's a tablecloth. And if you have somebody with divination and they go, I'm going to roll. Yeah, you envision that you're going to finish dinner.
You see where this tablecloth will end its life.
How are you liking dinner right now? It's okay. Yeah, it's going to be okay when you're done. It doesn't change. You know what I mean?
I'm seeing a bill in your future.
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to tip correctly.
I see what you mean, but it's kind of the... With the vague nature of prophecy and visions, right? I could see someone saying, okay, what kind of sense am I getting? And wanting there to be a deeper meaning.
Mm. And I see what you're saying. Like, if somebody is kind of grasping at straws, so they try to find patterns anywhere, maybe link it up with a tool of some sort where you need a specific set of conditions. For example, like you need to roll the bones and you roll the skill to interpret those bones. Or maybe it only works when you're, at the scene of a crime or something like that.
Yeah, I think if it's the scene of a crime and somebody does that, then you're like, well, okay, that's pretty fair. Yeah, because there's something horrible happened although at the scene of a crime. It's like, well, a crime happened, so he doesn't return to the scene of the crime. Sorry. So that's probably a better example for investigation, but I don't know. You could kind of play with that. Maybe you try to make it where they are, like a more passive and active kind of divination, and you give them clues. You know, we were talking, let's go with that tactile vision, because that was pretty cool. And like a tree, like a forest, like, you know, big, thick, ooh, pine needles. And then they enter, like, something with pine trees, and then they go, okay, I'm going to try it out. And you're like, that's okay. I might go with that. I might actually use this to give you more. Or they enter a car, and they go, air freshener, pine.
Yeah.
And then they go, roll. Of course, that's a little bit difficult, that second example, in that you enter a car, and you go, you smell the pine air freshener. And then they're like, wow, that's a pretty big hint. Unless you do that every car. And it's kind of a mint, kind of a vanilla on this car.
Oh, new car smell.
Sorry, but was the pine air freshener, was that like a major clue in whatever mystery they were trying to solve? Or
what I was saying is if you can combine I don't see a player being able to abuse it the way you're saying, because the game master would just limit the visions. But I was just saying if the player really likes to kind of be like the divination detective and, you know, kind of roll and be really active with those roles, and that's great, but maybe play with that, also give them visions. And in the visions, maybe give them a clue of what places they would be able to make their roles.
Hmm.
And one example is they suddenly feel pine needles, or they smell pine. So then anything kind of related to pine that comes up, then maybe that's a cue that they could try to do it.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
That's cool. I like that.
I wasn't thinking so much that the player would try to abuse this, right? I was just thinking they would put, like, undue pressure on the GM.
But then the GM just says, no, you don't have a vision, or this is your vision. Like, we're joking about it, but yeah, the bill came. You know what I mean? Because that's, whatever their power is, I mean, it doesn't exist. So you could just say it's whatever, and there's different streams, and they're all over the place, and they can grab it, you know? There's this, TV series, and they all got superpowers, and one of them is an autistic guy, and he can see all the spectrums or something like that. So he can see communication, you know, and he can like watch TV without turning on the TV because he just sees all the and hear like stuff that goes on. But anyway, and you can say that there's all these little strings of different timelines going all around, and this person is like grabbing them. Some of these are pretty mundane because like the future is not necessarily exciting. Like wait. Wasn't that exciting? So yeah, they can grab a lot of mundane ones if they keep doing it. it could get pretty tiresome if they just keep doing it and you're like, all right, yep, okay, you succeed, all right, this is what you see. But I don't think they would.
I don't really think they would either. But
if they don't, then just give them nosebleeds.
What about you foresee a nosebleed?
He doesn't mean in character. He means in real life.
Yeah. You foresee a fist hitting your face. Bam. But I think that's a strong case for sort of keeping the divination as something active that the character has to do.
Yeah. So here's a question I want to ask you guys. We're kind of going back a little bit to omens. If you used omens in a game, how do you think you would use that? Like, I was imagining because, you know, if you told the characters this game is going to contain omens where things that I describe around about the world, they will foretell the future like that. I could see players really going overboard with, you know, everything is an omen. Come up with some pretty crazy ideas.
Yeah, you raise a good point in that omens are one of the things, like, sure, there was, like, experts reading the omens, but then a lot of common people, you know, they would see, like, the comet, and they go, ooh, that's an omen.
That can't be good.
Yeah, that can't be good. Ooh, solar eclipse, you know, whatever. So, I don't know, if you say there's going to be omens and you make a solar eclipse, yeah, people are going to do that. But, there's going to be omens in this game, and you describe something normally, and the players are going to go, oh, that's an omen of something, you know.
Well, I wonder if that's the case, because, I mean...
It's raining.
On one hand,
that's an omen for... What, is that what you're worried about?
Well, it's not so much a worry. Like, on one hand, I could see it being really fun. If the players really got into it, they could start seeing, you know, deciding whatever they want as omens and then trying to figure out what it all means. And it could be really exciting for both the GM to hear the ideas that they come up with and also for the players because they could, you know, just have fun coming up with this stuff. But also, on the other hand, it could also get out of control and just weigh down the game because everybody's just looking... You know, navel gazing.
Well, this is going to sound like a cop out, but I think it depends on the setting of the game you're playing. Because as Lyle said, like in certain countries, in certain time, even common folk see something and they're going to make a big deal out of it, right? Like, oh, solar eclipse, or oh, morning breakfast. This egg I cracked. There was a chicken in it. You know, what is that going to mean?
Did that mean a lot to somebody?
No, I mean, just saying as an example. I'm drawing it from Game of Thrones, you know.
Just thinking in the past, probably a lot of chickens in the eggs.
Well, yeah, exactly, you know.
Hold on, I think there's chickens in all the eggs.
All right, not a hard-boiled egg that you crack for breakfast or a soft-boiled egg, you know.
I think in the Philippines or someplace they eat
But that. They do that on purpose.
Yeah, they do that on purpose.
All right.
Imagine me, I'd be like, this is going to be this horrible day.
Exactly. that backs up my point where...
I can't scramble this.
Yeah, exactly. Where in... I don't know, if you have that kind of setting for your game, then why not just sort of let the players run wild?
I think it can get annoying and frustrating. I think of the three of us, Chris, you're the kind of, you really like using visions.
I do. I really do. Yes. Too much so.
Yeah. I think, yeah, you have to make that special, and it has to be obvious that it is a sign. Mm-hmm. And the thing about omens is there's very few examples, or none that I can really think of a subtle omen.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like somebody's like, you know, when William the Conqueror, you know, invaded England, you know, it was to, you know, 25 degrees. Oh, man. No, it was like, there was a comment. So, like, wow, okay.
Yeah.
It's unusually mild today.
Yeah, I suppose really an omen is something that you have to notice out of the ordinary, so.
Yeah, and I think that's what that's what makes it usable.
Remember when Wayne had the guy looking at a newspaper?
Yes.
Omen!
Yes. And then we're like, I know what you're trying to do, but it's too mundane for us to, as characters, to make a big deal of that.
I think,
and that was really tough because it was a really good clue, and it was obvious that you were giving us a clue, but then we were kind of torn because it was like,
it's not,
it was too mundane to be a real clue for anybody, but maybe Columbo or something.
Well, guy walks out in the morning, picks up his paper off the front lawn, looks at it. That's not out of the ordinary at all, you know.
Right.
And it's kind of one of those things like we've mentioned before, like in a game, anytime the game master draws attention to an object or something in the game, that means it's important just because of the fact they've mentioned it. And I think omens are a chance for you to do that naturally. And you would have to describe something big, solar eclipse, you know, snow, hail, raining frogs.
Well, snow.
I meant in summer.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
I realize I didn't clarify that, which is why I went on to raining frogs, you know. Sorry.
What season are the frogs raining? no, but like, if you're a person that likes to really use mood then, you know, it's raining, you know, it's thunder, you know, and you're walking in the streets, you feel miserable. Like, you gotta be careful, because then if you're a person that does that and really likes to establish a mood through the environment and your descriptions, then your omens really gotta be over the top.
Right.
Because players are used to you describing all these things, and it's just like, oh, it's rain. What's rain mean? Maybe I feel down. Maybe somebody's gonna get murdered tonight.
I'm going to walk in and have to change my clothes because they're wet.
Yeah.
But if that's the case, then you could use visions and dreams.
Yeah.
And
it just has to be pretty obvious.
Yeah, exactly. You black out walking down the street, and suddenly you're in a room filled with fire. You're in one of the 9 pits of hell, and you're like, whoa, how did that happen?
Yeah, that's an omen.
Is that an omen or a vision? That's a vision.
Vision.
Yeah, it is. Oh. Wrong again. Damn.
So Wayne, you were guess to wrap up. We talked about a few things, but we thought we'd talk a little bit about how you would use or differentiate between fortune-telling and divination and how that would affect the game world.
Oh, the way that you would use divination. I mean, we mentioned in the beginning that divination comes from the same word as divine.
Mm-hmm.
And what I read is divination was usually part of a standard, often religious ritual. So it was done by, like, priests or people who were somehow connected to the clergy, where fortune-telling wasn't, you know. I guess a good example, or I guess a good modern example, is the eight ball. You know, the magic eight ball.
Mm-hmm.
It's not real fortune-telling, but you didn't really have to believe in spirits or that God or gods were speaking through it to use it. Where something that was actual divination, there is that kind of, I guess, connotation where there is something religious to it, and God is either speaking through you or through the tools that you're using. And you could actually have both in the game setting, where fortune-telling would be very secular, and people who use actual sort of quote-unquote real divination, okay, what does that mean? Are they part of the religion? Where does that put people who use divination in your world? What kind of role do they have?
I don't know if you have them both in the same world, how that would work. I guess technically you could say Earth has them both in the same world, and that historically they did. And some people still think so. But I'm hesitant to put them together because I don't want to turn it into like an arcane divine distinction where it's just two sides of the same coin. It really doesn't matter. So I would probably play it where the diviners, the people that are connected to some sort of god or gods, that's really reliable because, or is really unreliable because the gods lie and play tricks, you know?
Hmm. Well, you know, there is the real historical example with the Greeks. The oracles, they spoke with the gods' voices or the gods told them the information, whereas the seers were just regular guys who read the signs. I suppose the signs were attributed to the gods, but they didn't really have any connection to the gods at all.
Well, you brought that up, and like seers could only provide yes or no answers to questions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a question of reliability in this case. It's just a question of how much information you get from the two different things.
How much they can divine. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's a real world limiter, and I really can't think of a better one than that.
Hmm.
Unless you say one's a false, but if that's established in your world, then no one's going to go to the fortune teller. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of, if you separate it out to where you say that gods exist in your campaign and that gods give certain people information, unless it's something like the case with the Greeks where the people who get gods information, they're inaccessible to almost everyone but the richest and most powerful, then no one else is going to use the regular fortune tellers because why bother? You can talk to a god.
Well, no, I mean, there are other limiters. I happen to think the ancient Greeks, oracle versus seer, yes, no answers versus like kind of full cryptic answers is the best one. But there are other limiters. One is like currency.
Right.
That's kind of a mundane limiter on something that's pretty extraordinary. But then why would you pay more for divination? And it could be like, if you want to find out about grand events, then you go to somebody who can divine and speak to the gods, because the gods aren't going to talk about, are you going to meet Mr. Right? No, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to find out about your personal future, And that could be quite interesting because it's like you might survive for the next, you might live for the next 20 years, but maybe the rest of the party or all, everybody else dies. And maybe you end up in prison or something like that.
Yeah. But alive.
Yeah. But alive, you know what I mean? So you can't get as much information, and maybe they can give more than yes-no answers. We'll even say the fortune tellers can give you more than that. But it's on very limited things. It's on maybe your personal future, or it's only so far into the future.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, like the distance, you know, the divine people could see, you know, whatever, 100 years into the future, whereas the regular person could see next week, maybe.
Yeah, as soon as you allow the fortune teller to have as much power as the diviner, then there's no real point to have the diviner.
Or the fortune teller.
Or the fortune teller, yeah. I guess, because there's nothing really to distinguish them. I'm trying to think of an example how exciting it would be or trying to think if it would be exciting to have the fortune teller be the grand seer and the diviner kind of like some, you know, goat farmer, like hermit or whatever. But no, as soon as you bring in the gods, it's too big. It's too big.
Yeah. Otherwise, where does the fortune teller's abilities come from? Is it magic? Is it the natural world? And then why is the god less powerful than those?
You can almost do something like, if the fortune teller, and this gets back to when I was talking about the math thing, and this is stealing this from, the old mage, where you had the technocracy versus the mages. So it's like technology versus magic. And the fortune teller actually uses like tools.
Mm.
And the bones are actually just a tool. And for whatever reason, because they're using a tool, they don't see that as magic per se.
Mm.
And for some reason, that's more reliable. But then you can kind of play in that. Maybe the magic people are good and they're trying to overthrow this technologically corrupt society or something like that. I don't know.
You know, it'd be fun if you started out that way, where you had kind of the diviners and the fortune tellers, but it turns out you discover over the course of the campaign that the fortune tellers are actually like a reawakened or a weaker-powered god that's trying to come back. That'd be fun.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think the point to take away from all that is if they're not different enough, just roll them together.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a great point for just anything. If you're trying to have two things that are different but not really different, then... Yeah, whatever.
No, I think that's a good point. Like, because if we're talking about a game, right, there's only so many mechanics in a game. And if things are mechanically similar, then why not just make them the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no real difference between, like, arcane and divine magic in a lot of fantasy games. I mean, you rest and then you read your spell book for a couple hours versus rest and pray to your god for a couple hours. There's...
Right.
Really no mechanical difference there.
I guess it gets back to the advice we used to give quite often, but haven't so much before, but if you want it to matter, make it matter.
Mm, yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Actually, I think the advice was a little bit different, wasn't it? It's like, if you're going to put it in your game, make it matter. Yeah.
Things evolve over time.
Yeah.
Our message is vague.
Do you want it to be like strong? Make it strong. Yeah. You want it to be weak? Make it weak. Sorry. you ever watch Mystery Men with Ben Stiller?
Yeah.
Yes.
And the guy, what is this, the Sphinx or something? And he's like, control your anger. And he's like, or it will control me. And he's like, is that what you're going to say? And he's like, something like that. So that wraps up our second installment of Magic, which was about divination or fortune telling, if you want to make that distinction.
Thank you for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online, www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episode right there on the website or download it off of DriveThruRPG or through Stitcher or stream it through iTunes. You can also post in our forums, follow us on Facebook, on Twitter, or on the website, or just send us an email because we always love hearing from all of you. Thank you very much, and see you next time.
Bye.
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 DriveThruRPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week, and we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. DriveThruRPG, the one true source for RPGs. Oh,
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.